of Romans is what he's left talking about. And he told us both in his home study and in the 20s and 30s. Would y'all consider Ken a scholar on the book of Romans? Because I would consider him a scholar on the book of Romans. And he's, of course, been asked on more than one occasion why he hasn't written a commentary on the book of Romans, because I think that he probably could. And his response is, well, the second half of chapter 8 is kind of, you know, the reason I haven't written a commentary on it. And so, of course, naturally, he leaves the week to cover the second half of chapter 8. And he asked me, he told me twice during the week that, you know, well, go ahead, you know, go in there and just knock them out, you know. And I'm going to cover it anyway when I get back. And so he said that two times. And I'm not a very smart fellow, but when someone tells me two times they're going to come back and cover it anyway, there's really no reason for me to go ahead and get off into it and cover it. So, it is, if you haven't studied with him about it, you need to be here next week when he does come back and cover it, because it is a very intriguing, very interesting, outside-the-box way of looking at that part of the book that I had never heard of in my life, that makes good logical sense. I just never thought of it that way, and it had not been presented to me that way. So hopefully that will set a hook for you to come back and listen to what he has to say. It's enough where I don't want to get off into it, because I don't have as much gray hair to back it up as Ken does. I don't have as much hair as Ken does, technically speaking. But I don't have as much experience at it as he does on that particular point of view. And I like the point of view, but I'm not there yet on teaching it. I just can't do it. So, with that being said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to cover a little bit of what we've been covering in the TNT class over there in the other building, and that is practical Christianity, because it is applicable to all of us, and in many cases we end up doing the, you know, kind of trading classes, but sometimes we don't. Sometimes we don't do the same class in here that we do over there, a different quarter and those kind of things. And so I wanted to, in case they don't end up doing that, I wanted to be able to give you at least a taste of what we've been doing over there. And it's been everything, a lot of different things. It's not a book study, or it's just a topical study on practical Christianity. And of course, in our life and times, and we live, and it's very cliche, but we live in some very interesting times. Would you agree? You know, we are constantly bombarded with really bad news, it seems like. And of course, that's because that's what sells. Provocative things get attention, and provocative topics are what people pay attention to. But, you know, there's so many media outlets now. You know, it used to just be basically, well, it used to be just newspaper, word of mouth, and then newspaper, radio, word of mouth, and then newspaper, radio, television, word of mouth, and now you can't list them all. I mean, newspaper, radio, television, internet, your phone, you know, they got televisions in bathrooms with the news on. You know, you literally can't get away from it. And of course, all you hear about today is maybe the ladies' restrooms don't, but the men's rooms do. You know, the economy is down, and people are getting laid off, and it's hard to find a job if you get laid off. The dollar is devalued. I'm not sure I know what all that means, but that's what they tell me. So it's devalued. Gasoline's outrageous. The government's run amok. Middle East and Northern Africa are in turmoil. And China's taken over, and they hold all of our debt. Our children will be exposed to more and worse trash at school and places than they ever have before. And I'm not going to be able to retire when I wanted to, and blah, 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 blah. And that's all we hear. It seems that way, anyway. That's all we hear. And to sum it up, if you look at all those things and you listen to all that talk, it would lead one to believe that it's never been this bad before, ever. Never been this bad. And I think from a Christian standpoint, we have to look in things, as the old saying goes, in view of eternity. And whether we were stuck here in the 1830s, 1930s, or 2011, this is where we are. And we are Christians. And there are practical applications to how we deal with the world, and that I believe worked just as well in the first century as they do today. I mean, the Word of God is a living, breathing method for our lives. And it was not trapped in time, it was meant for all of time. And the applications therein will help you get through the worst times ever, so we've been told. Turn to Ecclesiastes 1, and we're just going to do a little blurb through there. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, I'm just going to read real quick verses 8 through 11. Solomon says, "All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again, and what has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, 'Look, there's something new'? It was here already, long ago. It was here before our time. There is no remembrance of men of old, and even those who are yet to come won't be remembered by those who follow." He had a weird writing style, in my opinion. It's very, it sounds, if you read it out loud, very depressed or depressing if you don't read it in context. But of course, the whole book of Ecclesiastes is Solomon going through and saying, "Hey, I tried everything I saw under the sun, it's all for naught, it's all vanity." But what he's telling us here, and this is, we're talking before Christ, obviously, here, and we hear about it on the news, or we'll see it on a website that pops up, new biological species found, 7,000 feet under the sea. Is it really a new biological species that was, it's new to us, right? But it's hardly new. There isn't anything new. The problems that we're having right now are not new. This has happened before. And we're going to spend the majority of our class this morning in 1 Peter chapter 2. And what we're going to find is that there are ways that we have to act as Christians if we're going to draw people to Christ, if we're going to live lives in such a manner that brings people to us, that draws people to Jesus. So we'll start reading there in 1 Peter chapter 2. Well, let's ask a few questions first. Because really what you hear about, particularly right now, and if you're talking about American government, is we got lots of problems, right? Or at least we have ourselves convinced that we do. And it's always easier to point out the problems when it's not your guy in office. So, 5 years ago, all we heard about was how horrible and what a terrible job George W. Bush was doing. And now that it's somebody else, all we hear about is what a bad and terrible job that Barack Obama's doing. And to sum it all up, what is a Christian's attitude when it comes to authority? What are the attitude that we're supposed to have? Submission. That's one word, that's it. That's all there is to it. It doesn't make any difference who's in office, doesn't make any difference how they got there. If God didn't want them to be there, I can assure you, brothers and sisters, they wouldn't be there. So just because it may not be who we want there, I don't care if it's the local level, the state level, the federal level, the United Nations, whatever it is. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
David, a real good point he just said is that there's a plan. You know, God has a plan. And we don't necessarily have to know the whole plan, and we may not ever necessarily know the whole plan, at least in our lifetime. But the one-word mantra that we should try to live by is submission. So let's read, I'm going to start chapter 2, verse 11. Beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against the soul. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles. And why is that? So that in the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, they may, because of your what? Your good deeds, your good attitude, the things that you do that are obviously right, as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation. You ever been... We good? I promise not to relax any more on the podium. You ever been made fun of, or maybe when you were younger it would be the case, or now as an adult, been questioned about maybe what you would or wouldn't do, or who you would or wouldn't associate with, or what your parents would or wouldn't let you do? What's the best way to ask this? We're instructed to be in the world, right? But not of the world. There's going to be times where we have to make decisions and choose to do or choose not to do things that are going to make us appear different. And that's okay. But you have to understand that when you do something like that, when you make a decision to make a stand or to not associate with someone or something, that it's there's a good chance it's going to hurt somebody's feelings. And when that happens, a lot of times, we see a lot of people, it's not just in the world, by the way, it sometimes happens in the church, that when someone's doing really good or really, really well, when they're performing well or when they appear to be doing really good things, there always seems to be at least one or maybe a crowd of people that want to do what to that person? You got to bring them down, right? We can't be having this. We can't be having this person making us look bad, right? So we attack the character. If we can, we start trying to dig up dirt on them, open up the closet, find out what they got going on in their life. We attack their integrity, you know. And what Peter's saying here to the Christians is that keep your behavior excellent all the time. Is it going to be perfect? It's not going to be perfect. That can't be done. But the whole point is that eventually, if you are doing enough right, and if you are walking in the light as he is in the light, no matter what is thrown against you by the devil or by the world or what's claimed about you, eventually what he's telling us is because of your good deeds, God will be glorified. Doesn't matter what the other people say. Burton Kaufman said on this particular passage, he says, the very purity of our behavior will condemn the world. Does that make sense? And his point behind that is that it's going to make people feel angry because they feel like you're doing it to try to make them look bad, or they feel like they can't achieve that same level of character. And in reality, it's not, you're not anything special. We're not doing anything wonderful or marvelous. We're just doing what we believe as close as we can to be the way the Bible says to do things. And people don't like it. Any questions or comments about that? Yes, sir.
And I would say that the terminology about sin in the world, it then makes them feel guilty.
Right.
Maybe they're not doing everything just right. Maybe they should try to change a little bit.
And with a soft enough heart, that'll lead someone to repentance. It worked for me. it worked for everybody in here for the most part at some point in time. And so you're right. I mean, but sometimes when we get made to feel guilty, we don't like that feeling. We don't like getting caught with our hand in the cookie jar. We don't like people pointing out our faults. It makes us look weak. Yeah, we're not talking about walking around and pointing out people's faults, by the way. The actions that we're talking about ought to be done in such a manner that the people find it in their own selves, that he's got something that I don't have, or she's got something I don't have, and I want it, and I want to know how he or she got it. Those are the thoughts and the questions that our actions ought to provoke. Matthew 5:10 says, "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." If you make the kind of decisions that from time to time we have to make as God's people, we will be persecuted. We will be made fun of. We will be pointed out. We will be cast out. We'll be outsiders. We'll be a peculiar people, right? It is. It's tough to do in our society, though, because it's so easy to assimilate, and there's some innocent, at least seemingly innocent, things that go on, you know, in the United States and in the Woodlands, but you can get caught up in the world here real quick, and it appears harmless, and that's how the devil has designed it, by the way, is to appear harmless. Tyrone. Read it for me. It's guaranteed. In fact, if you live a godly life, you will be persecuted. 5:16 on Matthew, "In the same way, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good deeds and praise the Father in heaven." Not praise you, right? Praise the Father in heaven. Yes. You're right, Freeman. No, you're absolutely right. And if we had time, we'd get into that. I have all those verses here, but I know we're not going to get to them. That's okay. I'll let somebody else talk about husbands and wives. Verse 13, and here's what we're going to get into. "Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution." Who all does that leave out? That would be none. "Whether to a king as the one in authority or to governors as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. For such is the will of God, that by doing right you may silence the ignorance of foolish men." Submit to every human institution. Piece of cake, right? Anybody, any European history buffs in here? I am not one. This was written about somewhere around 63 AD. Can you think of who the emperor may have been in Rome at the time that this was written? I'll give you a hint. Legend has it, he played the fiddle. It would be Nero. Peter is telling Christians abroad, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution. And Nero is the emperor right now. Now, you think we have problems? Not even close. I mean, our presidents have done some crazy things in the last decade and a half or so, but I have yet to see any of them light anybody on fire to light the streets at night. I haven't seen anybody thrown into Reliant Stadium to be eaten by lions, or even be threatened, or feel like that you can't go out in public or worship in a place like this. Yet. Okay? So think about what was going on when Peter was writing this, and you're circulating this open letter in catacombs underneath Rome, risking life, the lives of your children, to live as Christ lived. Submit yourselves. And he does say, for the Lord's sake. Acts chapter 5, verse 29 gives us a little bit of insight about, because what if the government's asking us to do things that are diametrically opposed to Christian living? There you go. Peter and the apostles answered, we must obey God rather than men. In other words, there may come a time, I pray that it doesn't happen in our lifetime, at least not here, but it is happening in other places around the world, that people are threatened with their lives, or certainly at least their freedom, if they choose to worship God and practice Christianity when the government tells them not to. Last Sunday in China, they were rounding up people that were meeting in unauthorized places for worship on, I guess it was Easter Sunday. And there were something like, at least the numbers I read, that there were some, you know, yet to be authorized by the government over there. They have two governing authorities over religion. One's over Catholics, one over Protestants. And basically you have to be registered with them, right? And in other words, worship in the manner that they prescribe. And there's supposedly about 20 million people that are currently under one of those two governing bodies. But the story that I read said that there was believed to be some 60 million Christians actually worshiping underground, more or less. And that sounds like a whole lot of people, but we're talking about China. 1.3 billion people. So, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution. The verse 15 says, for such is the will of God that by doing right you may silence the ignorance of foolish men. The kind of ignorance I think that he's talking about here is the ignorance that'll repeat a rumor or repeat a, Kaufman calls it a vicious slander, without checking the validity of it first, without checking the truth of it first. That's kind of the context that we're looking at here, is that you want to be the kind of person that doesn't jump to conclusions, or when you hear something, you run out and say, man, did you hear about so-and-so? You got to hear this. This is crazy. And then you're on board. You're as bad or worse as the person who started the rumor, because you didn't check its validity. For he knows at least that it's not true. The person that started it, you didn't even bother checking. 16, act as free men and do not use your freedom as a covering for evil, but use it as bond slaves of God. I had a note about that. You got to be, and we can come off like this at times if we're not careful. You know, we are free from sin. But if you're free from sin, you're a slave to what? Righteousness, slave of God, right? It's one or the other. Either you're a slave to sin or you're a slave to God. We choose to be slaves of God, slaves of righteousness, free from sin. And a lot of times, if we're not real careful, we can let that develop a haughty arrogance in us, and that's not the way it's designed to be. And he's saying that you can't use your freedom as a covering for evil, as a covering for slandering something you're supposed to be submitting to. You say, well, I don't have to submit to that because I'm a Christian, and we think differently than that. We're better than that. And Peter's warning us against that. He says, you know, some claim to be above the state, and they'll speak contemptuously of authority or people in positions of authority. We've got to be real careful about that. I don't know when the last time you turned on talk radio was, but they speak pretty contemptuously about our government. And I'm not saying, I'm not running around on free speech, but what I'm saying is be real careful about the freedom that we have. Because if it's not something that you would say about a Christian brother or sister, we probably don't have any, and I'm talking about me too, we don't have any business saying it about somebody else, do we? I mean, you can call right and right and wrong wrong, that's okay. But speaking contemptuously or speaking evil about someone just because you don't agree with their philosophies is not how we're called to righteousness, is it? Or is it? Anybody disagree with that or point it out a different way?
Well, how would you speak about Hitler?
I'd speak that he was crazy, number one, but and that he literally made decisions that a rational thinking human being I don't think would generally make. And I may be right, I may be wrong about that, but you, like I said, you can call right and right and wrong wrong. What he did was horribly wrong. But he was the leader of Germany. Like it or not, he wasn't Nero. He wasn't far, but he wasn't Nero. And all I have to go on is Peter saying, submit to every human institution. If you have to meet underground to practice Christianity, you meet underground and practice Christianity. We have to serve God rather than men. But just be ready to deal with the consequences if you're going to do that. Does that make sense? Like the people in China. If you want to worship in public, that's okay, as long as you understand that you probably be hauled off to jail for doing so. Paul got hauled off to jail. It can happen. That answer your question? Was I answering your question? Okay. Oh, we're going to get there. Don't do it. Don't do it. Man, that's my driver. That's my 300-yard. That's it. I'm kidding. We will get there.
If Satan is the author of confusion and God is the truth in the life, if he's telling you during difficult times to put your faith and trust in him and live your life according to his will, then if everybody does that, it will be according to God's will. And it doesn't mean that Paul didn't quit speaking the truth.
Right. Here and then back there, I guess.
But to make your point, he never said anything bad about the governments that were in place or any of that kind of stuff. He just told us how to live.
Right.
So he never condemned anybody other than someone that was an evil doer. Mm-hmm. He would condemn the evil in some way. But he taught us how to live.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Back there.
I disagree with you.
Good. Go ahead, I'm listening.
For years and years, you had your mainstream media basically telling you what all your news has, and they're going to tell you the same stories, every single one of them. What talk radio does, and I don't think they're talking bad about the government, but they're saying things, okay, here's what you're being told on one side, guys, but here's actually what's being told on the other side. In many cases, all they're really doing is saying what the real truth is, but they're not lying, deceitful, hateful against the government. It's things that are really going on that we don't even know about because, you know, people like to control what we hear. And you get a choice now with, talk radio, different type of internet things, that you can get opposing opinions. And I don't see those as necessarily being anti-government.
No, I don't think that they're anti-government, but I know that I've listened to more than one, and they can get, I mean, flat out ugly about what it is. Now, that being said, we also need to look at them for what they really are. They're entertainers, first and foremost. Make no mistake. They're on the radio not to tell you the other side of the truth. they're selling ads, and they're making a lot of money doing it. And that's okay. Yes, they are. Absolutely. All of them are. You're absolutely right. No, you're absolutely right. They're... I don't disagree. Right. I don't know that either of them believe what they're doing is the truth necessarily. They're doing what sells space. We gotta move on because I gotta get to 17 or we'll never get out of here. We won't make my point. All right, for such is the will of God, verse 15. 17. And this, I believe, really does sum up practical Christianity. If you could sum it up in a very short sentence, this will help you sum it up. It says, honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Period. Honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Yes, sir. I agree. Mr. Cannon.
My question would be, what about the founding fathers who created this country? They didn't submit to the authority which was oppressive towards the God. So were they wrong or were they right?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know that. I think that in God's time, he'll handle it. That's really my opinion. In other words, had God never wanted the United States of America to be formed, it would not have been formed. Had God never wanted the Roman Empire to fall, the Roman Empire wouldn't have fallen. There are times when nations are in good graces with God, and then they fall out of good graces with God. We have a lot of examples of that in the Old Testament, and we have a lot of examples of that throughout history, that God will bring his people back to submission. And God will, in his time, he'll make an avenue to make that happen.
Well, don't you think, like, with people rising up to people, God then rewards them. Instead of waiting on, I'm gonna change everything, he's waiting for people to respond.
Sure. I think the point that I was trying to make, and let me go back a step two, is that things aren't as bad now as we think they are, or as we're being told that they are. In other words, like it's never been seen before. Was there homosexuality in the Roman Empire? Yeah, obviously there was. This is talked about in the New Testament. You reckon there was prostitution in the Roman Empire? Probably more widely spread and more widely accepted than it is here today. And so all I'm saying is that in the view of the whole thing, we just have to be, there's nothing wrong with saying that you don't like the way the government's headed, and that's we're blessed with a democratic republic, and we can choose leaders based on how we feel. And I believe Christians should actively be involved in that, by the way, in that process. God gave it to us, because not everybody has it that good. If we don't like the way things are going, start a campaign, start a grassroots movement, and go a different direction. We can do that. But we're still called to submit. Doesn't mean you have to agree with it. Doesn't mean you don't have to get carted off to jail if you want to demonstrate otherwise. Just be prepared for that to happen, and be prepared to deal with that if it does happen. There's nothing wrong with it. He did in a short time. 18, servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect. Not only those who are good and gentle, but also those who are unreasonable. Now, we make the parallel today that that's an employer-employee relationship because that's all that we really have to compare it to. But make no mistake, they were talking about slaves and masters. And there were Christians that were slaves. And what Peter's telling them here, if that's the hand you've been dealt, then that's the hand you've been dealt. Be submissive to your masters with respect. And by the way, not just the good, nice ones. You be submissive with all respect to even the ones who are unreasonable. Not easy to do. For this finds favor. If for the sake of conscience toward God, a person bears up under sorrows when suffering unjustly. For, verse 20, what credit is there if, when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure it with patience? In other words, you're not accomplishing anything if you endure something with patience and you brought it on yourself. You're dealing with your own consequences. But after that, but if when you do what is right and suffer for it and patiently endure it, this finds favor with God. And then this part I really wanted to get to, so we'll do it. 21. Basically, it boils down to Christ being our example, and that's 21 through the end of the chapter. So this whole time we're talking about, you know, submitting to authority, submitting to masters, you know, being treated unjustly at times, and we get to feeling sorry for ourselves or sorry for our country or angry about the way things are headed. 21, for you have been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving an example for you to follow his steps. 22, who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth. And while being reviled, he didn't revile in return. And while suffering, he uttered no threats, but kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously. And he himself bore our sins in his body on the cross, so that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. For by his wounds we were healed. For you were continually straying like sheep, but now you've returned to the shepherd and guardian of your souls. He's paraphrasing Isaiah. And he's saying, if just when you think you've had it bad, or just when you think you're being treated harshly or being treated unjustly, just remember Christ, who had no sin, who never talked back when he was being accused, standing before Pilate, who never reviled, uttered no threats, but just kept entrusting himself to he who judges righteously, that is, God. It's tough. It's a tough subject. How do you act, you know? How far do you let things go before you step in and do something? And like I said, we live in a nation where we, at least now, and Lord willing for a long time, will be able to peacefully change the government. The day may come where that can't happen anymore. As history tells us, the day will come. If the earth is standing long enough, that will eventually happen. But in our everyday lives, we have to submit, number one. We have to honor all people, whether they Christians, non-Christians, husbands, wives, children. We give them honor because they're all made in the image of what? They're all made in the image of God. You know, Paul goes through this laundry list of evil, sorcerers, idolaters, homosexuals, da-da-da-da-da-da. At the very end, he says, and such were some of you. Don't forget that once upon a time, we were lost too. Yes, Flo. You're absolutely right. Yes, sir. Can't do it, yeah. Yeah. Let's see. We're not going to, we don't have time to get into it. No, we don't. Well, we can do a little bit. Okay. Over in, it's still in 1 Peter, but it's chapter 3, verse 8. To sum it up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were called to the very purpose that you inherit a blessing. For the one who desires life to love and see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. He must turn away from evil and do good. He must seek peace and pursue it. Part of the logic behind that is that a true peacemaker is not a passive person. They're not a passive individual. We think of a peaceful person as a meek and lowly and quiet person, in order to pursue something, if you really believe it, you have to be active. You have to take the lead. You have to, you don't just keep the peace yourself, but you're earnestly inducing other people to do the same thing. And if that's by elections, if that's by forming a committee, if that's by holding town hall meetings, and that's what it's by. But seek peace and pursue it. We can't sit back and say, oh, all I want is world peace. I just want everybody to be happy. That's not going to get it done. It does require action. That's like saying we want our church to grow and then just sitting here and do nothing. If you want your church to grow, you got to do the things that make for a church growing. If you want peace and you want stability in your life, you have to do things that make for peace and stability in your life. If you want your kids to be educated in a place that you're not worried about the threats that they have to endure, then you have to make the things that do for that. You can't passively sit by and just hope that it happens. Yes, Elton. Yeah, that's right. If you didn't hear yourself, in all these matters, prayer is a recourse that we always have, no matter what, whether you're sitting in here where it's nice and peaceful and quiet, or you're sitting in a prison somewhere because you've been caught going to church. I'm sure glad we didn't cover anything provocative like the second half of Romans chapter 8. Thank y'all for your time.